Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in the Bronx, became a rabbi, and earned a black belt in karate. 25 years ago, he and his wife, Ruthie, lost their 2-year-old daughter, Sarah, to leukemia. Eventually, this tragedy led to them founding Kids Kicking Cancer. He's the Rabbi Emeritus of Young Israel of Southfield. His name, Rabbi Goldberg, and we're honored to have him as our guest. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Rabbi Goldberg, the founder and national director of Kids Kicking Cancer. Rabbi, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
It's a great privilege to be here, Jack.
Thanks. Can you start by telling us about your childhood and your parents?
Well, what I remember about my childhood was being very young. I had the privilege of having parents who were great people. Father was a veteran of World War II, actually a number of years ago. Moved my parents out of New York to be with us in Detroit just because of their advancing age. And Dad and I had the matching Eddie Bauer coats and would walk back and forth to the synagogue with marching tunes from the old World War II days. Fortunately, Dad passed away. It was now 5 years ago. But I grew up in the Bronx, and Bronx is located very close to New York City, which is very close to the United States, although there's some cultural changes. And attended PS 95, whose anthem I could still sing verbatim, but I won't definitely do that to your listeners. And attended Yeshiva University growing up, and from there went on to the world of the rabbi.
What did you learn from your mom and your dad?
Integrity, sense of inner strength, the ability to recognize that when you reach out and help other people, you're really giving to yourself. That probably was, in a nutshell, the essence.
When did you know you wanted to be a rabbi, and how do you become a rabbi?
When I failed out of all of the other graduate schools I applied to. No, not really. The word rabbi actually means a teacher, Jack. The concept of a rabbi is someone who loves teaching. And I did that naturally as a kid growing up. I didn't grow up as observant as I am today. But it bothered me if the Bible was true and the words were really God's words, then really one needed to look at it and observe and think about it and introspect, because if it wasn't true, the whole thing's a lie, and if it's a lie, why live it? And if it is true, how does one not respond to it? And that kind of drew me on a journey spiritually into the text of the ancient Jewish world.
How do you become a rabbi?
$19.99. You too. So actually years and years of study, Bible study, our oral law, which is called the Talmud. And I had the privilege of studying with one of the great leaders of the Talmudic world, Rabbi Soloveitchik, at Yeshiva University for a number of years.
You're a rabbi, and you're a black belt in karate. Those don't seem to mesh together.
As we say in the Jewish tongue, au contraire. I felt that every rabbi had to know how to break his board. And therefore, institutionally, it was a good idea. Frankly, martial arts is very much misunderstood. Martial arts is so much about the power of the mind and the soul, and it doesn't matter if you call it chi, ki, tanaga, dalam, neshama. It's about an inner light in a person and breaking through all of the adversity and the darkness that affects us.
For 19 years, you were with a congregational rabbi of Young Israel of Southfield.
Correct.
What did that job entail?
Young Israel is a wonderful, wonderful community. And it's actually a national movement of Orthodox Jews who are very much connected to the the modern world, who are very much involved in the community that surrounds them. It entailed counseling, it entailed teaching, growing. I never had the role of being a fundraiser. It was my job to be a fundraiser, and I tried to do that part well. But it really was a sense of family, and growing amongst that family was the key.
Your wife Ruthie and you were blessed with your first child in 1979. You named her Sarah, a daughter. Can you talk about that?
Sarah was born on the week in which the matriarch Sarah was born, and that was the source of her name. Also, Sarah Basia, Basia means the daughter of God, was my grandmother's name. She was a beautiful child, born with a rather full head of hair, unlike her father at this point. Blonde, blue-eyed. Many people commented that she looked like the Gerber baby. She was a happy child, sweet baby, and it radically changed our lives when we found out right before her first birthday that she had leukemia.
She passed to eternity at age 2.
Correct.
Psychologists say that one of the toughest things for a marriage to survive is the loss of a child. How did you and Ruthie get over that?
I would probably change the phrase. One of the toughest things for a parent to survive is the loss of a child. And with the normal stressors in a relationship exacerbated by extraordinary inner pain and outer feelings of guilt and all types of natural grieving emotions, it's a very difficult path. However, I'm blessed with an incredible wife, and she's blessed with a perfect spouse. So together we were able to focus on the blessings that we've had. Our daughter, who was actually the bone marrow donor, her sister Rachel, who now has 3 of her little ones and living in Baltimore, she was born in the process. And Ruthie was actually pregnant with our 3rd child. When we work with parents who are going through bereavement issues today, the most important thing we focus the parents on is the enemy of stress inside of their bodies, the ability to breathe out the pain, the fear, the anger, and to allow their bodies to relax. They can relax their bodies together as a couple, and individually as parents, they can begin to relax their minds and their hearts as well.
We're talking to Rabbi Goldberg, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Rabbi Goldberg, who's the Rabbi Emeritus of Young Israel of Southfield. Rabbi, in God's master plan, why do so many young people die?
One would have to be God to answer a question like that with just a simple answer. But ultimately, the real question of the master plan is, why are so many children born? Why is there life? What is its purpose? What these children have taught me, and I've been with dozens upon dozens of children, and as they've taken their last breath of life, and we've had, fortunately, hundreds and hundreds of children in both our programs. What they teach us is not so much about the end of life and its beginning, but its light. The ability to go through darkness and find light. Ultimately, in our belief system, life is not about the 60, 80, 90, 100 years that we're given, or about the IRS plans that we have during those 100 years of paying our taxes. Life is really about the ability to find that light within a world of challenge. Our kids teach us that they're really not problems in this world, they're challenges, and if you're really good, they're opportunities. To me, frankly, the saddest thing is to watch an old person die who doesn't have a clue why he or she lived. Our kids, I've had children at the end of their lives look up at their parents who are crying and say, "Don't cry, be happy." I've had children literally sit up from comas looking for a light and seeing their faces light up with an incredible brightness and sweetness because they found that light. And ultimately, these children are teachers. My daughter's still teaching me, and now I have hundreds of other children who are my teachers, and thousands of them, thank God, who are alive and continue to teach.
Time after time, I hear families who have lost a child or have a special needs child say, "Our hero. She's our angel. He's our gift from God. He's our teacher." Why?
To look at these children and to see the light in their eyes and the sparkle that comes from their soul is to naturally, intuitively see a teacher, see a hero, see an angel. And all of those words really speak to the same point, namely that this child has a purpose on this world that's extraordinary. And it may not be to be a CPA or an attorney or a doctor. It's to spread this light to this world. And these children do an amazing job of that.
You lose Sarah in 1981, and in 1992, you're asked to serve as the director for Camp Simcha in New York. That's the place for Jewish children with cancer. How did you ever get the courage to accept that challenge?
I totally looked at the person, Rabbi Schaller, who asked me to run the camp, and told him he's absolutely crazy. There's no way my wife and I can go into that environment. He was a good salesman. He said, "Just look. You spend 5 minutes with these children and you realize you can make them laugh, you can make them sing, you could watch them dance. And you know what, Jack? It doesn't matter if a child's dancing on their feet or their legs or the wheels of a wheelchair. These children dance a beautiful dance, and their song has extraordinary power." And those children convinced me that my path in life was with them.
How was Kids Kicking Cancer born?
Interesting question. We all understand well that if you or I were, as adults, were in the middle of a painful procedure and we started to scream out in pain, that the doctors would stop the procedure and figure out a better way to do it, except perhaps in billing. When kids have pain, by and large, and I teach this as an assistant clinical professor in pediatrics, when kids have pain, they hold them down tighter. I saw a wonderful little boy, 5 years old. He's very much afraid, very nervous. His pain, therefore, is out the window, being held down by two nurses in camp. And again, they're great nurses, and they tried to divert his attention. Nothing doing. And this little boy was screaming. And I walked in on that scene. It was so counterintuitive. I said to the head nurse, "Please give me 5 minutes with this child." I didn't have a clue what I was going to say to him. They were more than happy to leave the room. The kid looked at me like I was the governor. I just stayed his execution. And I looked at this boy and I said, "You know, I'm a black belt. And frankly, Jack, it doesn't mean a lot, but to a little kid, it's like a wow." And his eyes bugged. And I said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, do you want me to teach you some karate?" And I explained to him in the martial arts, you learn that pain is a message. You don't have to listen to it. We did a very simple Tai Chi breathing technique. 5 minutes later, the nurses came back, only needed one of them. 20 minutes later, the nurse took this large needle out of this boy's chest and he looked up at her and he said, "Did you do it yet?" And that's when Kids Kicking Cancer was born.
How did you ever conceive that karate could help these children?
We know well today that the mind has extraordinary influence on the body. And karate really, the martial arts, is really a focus of the mind controlling the body. And so it was such a natural, because kids believe in the martial arts. We just came from Children's Hospital with two of my martial artists dressed in their pajamas and their gi and the black belts, and they see a black belt, they believe in it. So it gives us the ability to get into their head, focus their mind, and 10 minutes later, it's a different child lying there.
What is Kids Kicking Cancer?
Kids Kicking Cancer is an organization that now has begun in the Midwest. We're starting, God willing, our 8th New York hospital and hopefully spreading across the country, teaching children that they are not victims, but they can be victors, that they could use the power of breath and the martial arts imagery, and they could punch through pain disease, fear, anger, and take control of their lives. And it's amazing.
How does meditation help in the healing process?
In medical school, we talk about psychoneuroimmunology, the ability of the brain to actually help the body to heal. But meditation diverts the pain message. If somebody was in a bank and they started shooting up the bank with an AK-47 and you dove for cover and you hit your toe, you don't even know your toe hurts because you're trying not to be shot. The same theory, the same theme. If you can divert attention and focus the brain waves towards power, towards energy, towards this incredible light inside the children, they really get it. And they get it in a way that affects their pain and brings a lot of impact in life and light to their families.
We're talking to Rabbi Goldberg. When we come back, we'll continue to talk about kids kicking cancer. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Rabbi Goldberg, founder of Kids Kicking Cancer. Today there's programs in 20 hospitals in 6 cities. Rabbi, it's one thing for you to come to believe that karate can help children with terminal diseases, but it's another thing to convince physicians, hospital boards, hospital presidents of that fact. How did that ever happen?
Jack, there's a growing awareness in the medical world today that it's not just about shots and medicines and chemotherapies, that the role of a person's sense of self. In medical school, I give a lecture called the ontology of oncology, because docs come if it rhymes, especially if you give them food. But there's a sense of awareness that people are not just made up of an amalgam of tissues and organelle. They're souls inside. And healing has a lot to do with addressing this power of the soul.
Can you talk about the courage and the inner peace of these children?
These children have such an awareness of life, and it doesn't mean that they're not normal kids who will act out, and they're not normal kids who will be afraid and will cry at all ages, and we encourage that. I always tell my martial artists, when you guys stop being able to cry, then you quit. But at the same time, there's a very special power and courage that these children have in facing their lives. And the more we allow them to express that as heroes in the martial arts power, etc., the more it resonates within them, and they end up teaching their parents how to do these breathing techniques, how to take control, as well as the people around them.
When you get a new child into the program, how do they normally react?
Well, there's no such thing as normal, but you know, when we hit the pad and the pad represents the tumor, very often the child will cry and just burst out in tears. And we've had moms and dads tell us that it's amazing they've never cried yet from the diagnosis. But the fact that the pad becomes the tumor that they're breaking through, we gave them permission to feel, to break through, and destroy that which is their greatest enemy.
We're talking to Rabbi Goldberg. When we come back, we'll ask him about awarding black belts to some of these children. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Rabbi Goldberg, who's referred to as Rabbi G by a lot of the children. Rabbi, you give out black belts to the kids in the final stage of their life, the end-of-life program. You embroider their name and master teacher on those black belts. Why?
You know, Jack, we never refer to it as an end-of-life program because there's so many difficult steps for a parent and a child to be able to accept it. We always tell the kids that beyond the black belt, there's first degree black belt to go for. But at the same time, it gives us an opportunity because the children understand well, very, very often, that this is really their final ceremony. We have an amazing ceremony and family and friends come, and sometimes they're in theaters and we have hundreds of people, and sometimes they're in crowded ICU rooms and we have family and friends in a few of the docks. But every person needs to know they have a sense of purpose. The three words we use in our program as a mantra of our karate mantra are the words power, peace, purpose. Power is the ability to bring this light inside of our lives, and peace to partner in the healing by creating that inner serenity, and purpose is that we are teaching the world. And so these children, when they receive their black belts, are awarded. Because we've had five-year-old kids get up in front of family and friends and describe that they're getting their black belt because they've defeated their cancer, because they're not afraid, they're not angry. If anything, they're more connected to God and the people around them. That's the power of the black belt and of that black belt experience. And we videotape those children, and we bring into other populations of kids at risk, so that our kids, all kids in the program, know that they're influencing and affecting others. And then the kids at risk, we videotape and say, if you did this, okay, you can get through your anger, your violence, obesity, or whatever the particular population we're working with is. Then we're going to videotape you and bring it back to those kids with cancer. You can help them. So we have the wildest thing. We have these kids with cancer, sometimes facing the end of their life, knowing that they have this purpose to help other children and other people. And those people, those kids, changing their life to help our kids with cancer, we call that the hero circle.
How many times have you been present as a child has passed to eternity?
Dozens of times. I've never stopped and counted, but each encounter is really a meeting the eternal. These children are so special. My own daughter, as she passed away, always lay on top of me. The bone marrow transplants in those days, and we did at UCLA, were terrible. And her skin was sloughing off, and there was having constant diarrhea and vomiting, etc., etc. And she would pat me on the back and say, "It's okay, Abba," it means Dad, "I love you." And the last day of her life, she pushed herself off of me, and I said, "Sarbasha, come back to Abba, come back to Dad." And she shook her head no. And I said, "Where do you want to go?" And she was a very bright little girl. At 2 years old, she would tell the doctors, "Please, no medications today." And she lifted up her hand out the window, the UCLA bed, it was right by the window, and she put her hand up facing heaven. And I said, "Do you want to go here, there?" All the different places she wanted to go, shook her head no. And finally said, "Do you want to go to God?" And she shook her head yes. And I debated with her. I said, "You know, the Bible says you have to choose life and we need you." And she actually stayed alive long enough for, they sent me downstairs to a apheresis unit to take my blood to try to give it to her as an antibiotic. The antibiotic for that particular strain that did her in, that was approved that day by the FDA. But she and so many other children, they have such an awareness. You don't look at a little child anymore. These are old souls who recognize that it's time to go home.
What have these experiences taught you?
To value each moment, that we can respond to anything in our lives with being defeated or finding God's grace and that hand that supports us and allows us to go forward so we can teach and reach others. That there's a purpose in this world, and even when we don't always see the light beyond the clouds, you get high enough, you can see that sunlight. And these children, Jack, they really bring you up there.
Would you please share with us a few specific stories?
Oh, we had a black belt by the name of Luke, and he's one of my great teachers. At the end of his life, and he had a terrible brain tumor, he was a great martial artist, a real hero, and a well-deserved black belt. He started a brain bleed. It was terribly painful, and he started screaming out. And his mom picked him up, and they called the ambulance, and all of a sudden, Luke did his karate breathing. And the last 10 minutes of his life, totally at peace, focused. These are incredible teachers. There was one young man who I taught how to do this. He had GVH after a bone marrow transplant. His skin and the whole body was turned against by the new marrow. It's graft versus host disease. His skin was so thin he couldn't get warm. Little boy by the name of Blake. So I sat with him the first night, and this was up in camp, and he was shivering under all these blankets, and we created this beautiful lake, and the sunlight began to radiate on the lake, and Blake began to feel that light, and he began to get warm, and it took him 20 minutes, but he felt that warmth, and he went to sleep, and the next night it was 10, and the next night 5, and that was the meditation he used beyond the most difficult of operations and surgeries before he finally succumbed to his disease. But we created this place called Blake's Lake, and we use that now to teach others. And a young man named Boris, who was a great martial artist, went through 2 bone marrow transplants, had a very difficult life, filled with extraordinary pain of a tumor pushing into his lungs. And he was so fascinated when he heard that there was this camp there, and we got him to camp, and he did great in camp, and he was fascinated with spirituality. Somehow the former Soviet Union robbed him a little bit of that, and he loved it. And he would call me up after camp and ask, Rabbi, how do you do this, and how do you do that, and what does God want from us? And just an amazing young man. And then he calls me one day, and he says, Rabbi, tell me, how do you prepare to die? I said, Boris, what's up? He said, it's back. How do you prepare to die? What do you tell a 17-year-old how to prepare to die? And I thought there for a moment, and I said, Boris, you don't prepare to die, but you have to understand every day is life. And when you get up in the morning and you could give your mom a kiss and hug your sister and just be able to reach out to your friends with a smile, you're affecting the whole universe, especially because you have pain. You could breathe beyond that pain, you're affecting the world. And then we got his scans to Sloan Kettering, to a friend of mine, and had a protocol for him. And he did great. And he calls me up one day and he says, Rabbi G, I just want to say God bless you. I said to him, Boris, God bless you. And he must have stopped for maybe a minute on the phone. And he says, you know what? I think he has already. I couldn't talk. Here's a young man who's gone through extraordinary hell, you'll excuse the expression, twice, 2 bone marrow transplants. And he felt blessed. How was I supposed to feel? I couldn't talk. So Boris, I'll talk to you later. And fortunately, the tumor came back with a vengeance a year later. And his doc's a friend of mine. And he described how it was from his abdomen all the way to his shoulder. I spoke to him just about every single day, and one day his doc calls me. He couldn't talk. Boris couldn't talk for maybe 2 days and fell into a coma. And his doctor, who can attest to this story from Sloan Kettering, Lenny Wexler, he calls me up and he says, Rabbi, Boris is going to die today. I just want to tell you. I called up his sister, said, do me a favor, put the phone by Boris's ear. She said, Rabbi, it's too late. It's too late. He's not responsive. He's been in a coma just for about a day and a half. I said, do me a favor, just put the phone by his ear. And I said, Boris, remember, we said that every day was life, but I want you to know now it's every second. But don't be afraid. Look for this great light. And then he died. When I met his mom, we came in for a debriefing. His mom said, what did you say to Boris at the end of his life? And I said, I want you to know what I said to him was that there was this great light, and explained. I said, but Mrs. Niyazov, why do you ask? And she said, because it was the most amazing thing. He had been in a coma, and when his sister put the phone to his ear, and after she hung up, he opened up his eyes, and then he sat up, and then he looked out like he was looking for something. And nobody could get his attention. It's like we weren't there. And all of a sudden, his whole face lit up, and then he closed his eyes, and then he went down, and then he died. What did you say to him at the end?
A dad comes to you and says, Rabbi, I can't handle this. My daughter, who I love immensely, has got cancer. Rabbi, I hate God. There is no God. No God would do this to my daughter. What do you tell that man?
That man is more normal than the person comes up and says, I can handle this. This is great. Because to respond abnormally to an abnormal situation is perfectly normal. And it's not our job to defend God. God gives us incredible strength and opportunities and love. but also the natural responses of anger and guilt and fear and all that stuff. It's our job in this world to give love, support, and strength to the people around us. And then that light of God comes even more apparent.
We're talking to Rabbi Goldberg. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Rabbi G, Rabbi Goldberg. Rabbi, the siblings and the parents of these children go through hell. How do you help them?
Cancer is a syndrome that affects the entire family. Not to work with the entire family is not to work with the disease. The patient has extraordinary guilt, anger. Siblings have jealousies and guilt and anger. Parents have guilt, anger, fears, etc. We treat every single component of that as an important part of our program. In our martial arts program, siblings are invited. We make no distinction between siblings and patients. And the siblings are empowered to break through the pad, which is their brother's tumor or their sister's tumor or their fears or their anger. And of course, with the parents, especially after bereavement, we, rather than allow them to go, they become even closer to us because that's the time they need this family of Kids Kicking Cancer the most.
Cancer is so prevalent today. What would you say to any of our listeners tonight who've just learned they have cancer or their loved ones just learned they have cancer?
Cancer is such a broad term, Jack, that it covers about 100 different diseases. Some of them, and many of them, very, very curable. And I would say to anyone who gets a diagnosis of any type of malignancy or any disease for that matter, number one, go get a second opinion, because no matter what you're doing, getting a second opinion is very sound medical advice. Number two, so that way you're taking care of your responsibility before you just put your life into someone else's hands. Number two, what we control, and we should be consumers in medicine, what we control mostly is our reaction. The ability to control stress, and God knows that getting a diagnosis like that is extraordinarily stressful, but we all have stress. Our focus is to breathe in this light and blow out the stress. And people can be taught very simply how to reduce stress, how to create a relaxation response. That is so imperative for a healing process.
How can our listeners learn more about Kids Kicking Cancer?
We welcome your listeners to tune into our website, which is kidskickingcancer.net, www.kidskickingcancer.net. One word, kidskickingcancer.net.
What's next for Kids Kicking Cancer?
Well, God willing, we're working hard now to expand on the West Coast. We've gotten some of the Hollywood superheroes to videotape telling our kids, you guys are the real heroes, which is such a thrill for the kids. But really, the truth of the matter is they are the real heroes. Hollywood, the sports stars, that's just part of the glitz around the outside. Our hero circle, which we're now in the middle of doing a study with the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, is really a very important component. And we're working with groups of children who have other issues to prove to our kids with cancer that you're teaching the world. And we've seen fascinating results with studies that we've done with kids with obesity, with a group of young ladies in Brooklyn who we were told if we kept their weight even over 20 weeks of martial arts training, that would be a victory because they're growing, so their BMI, their body mass index, is improving. These girls lost an average of 16 pounds in 20 weeks because they were training and they're helping the world, they're teaching the world. And for our kids with cancer to hear that and to know that they're impacting society, it's so important.
What dreams or goals do you still have?
Ultimately, our biggest dream is to reach every child in pain and allow these children to be the real teachers to the world that they are, to develop websites, to develop the connections and the networking to reach every hospital. We have extraordinary hospital partners, including a program at Sloan Kettering, Columbia Presbyterian, our, of course, our children's hospitals here, St. John's, St. Joe's, Beaumont, etc. But the hospitals don't pay for the program. They love the program, but in the world of medical economics today, unless it's reimbursable, we have to write the check. So continuing to reach out to friends and network and allow this to become a revolution in pediatrics, where children don't have to be held down, but allowed to soar, to transcend their pain with a feeling of inner power and might, rather than with old processes of that lend to even greater fear and low self-esteem.
Can you share with us your concept of advertising on the subways?
Well, that's an interesting story, Jack. Happened to be sitting next to a gentleman, and I have in my briefcase mock-ups that we've done of our kids from the subway panels, from the subways of New York City, telling the world about taking control. One picture of one of our great master teachers, a black belt, Brendan, in a martial arts stance, bald, clearly a pediatric oncology patient, with the words, "I don't need drugs to control my pain. Do you?" Another one of our heroes with a beautiful background that says, "Pain is a message that you don't have to listen to," etc. So I have this sitting in my briefcase, and I'm sitting next to this guy on the plane, and I'm talking about kids kicking cans. So I usually watch when they reach for the exit door. That's when I stop. And this guy's very interested. And I say to him, "What do you do?" And he says, "I'm in advertising." So advertising, could I show you these mock-ups and explain to him what we're doing? We want these kids to feel like they're teaching the world, etc. And I show him these subway panels, and he looks at me and says, "Are you stalking me?" I said, "What do you mean?" He pulls out his card. His name is Phil Stimson, Executive Vice President of CBS Outdoors. He says, "Those are my properties. CBS has the franchise on most of the transportation in the country, and those are my properties that you want to advertise on. What are you doing sitting next to me?" So I explained to him I wasn't stalking him, and that's in truth I wasn't, but that God happens to control the seating on NWA.com. And Phil, I said, "Obviously you've got to help me get these kids up there." And he said, "Well, let me check what we do." And he comes back, and 2 weeks later, he says, "I didn't find any free subway advertising, Rabbi, yet, but we got like all the bus panels in New York, and there are 2 million riders. Would your kids want to go up there?" And he said, "They sure will."
How has your faith grown through these unbelievable experiences?
This has been such an incredible journey. And to walk through life with these children, sometimes, Jack, it gets a little bit lonely. We now have a staff of 27 people, and sometimes the pressures of making the budget monthly are not always that simple. And I always feel these children are walking with me at the darkest of times. And they provide light. My daughter and Brendan and Luke and Boris and so many other children. And ultimately, I view all of them as God's presence to me. That we have, many times I have to tell you, people say, "Rabbi, it's very wonderful what you do." I have to tell you the truth, Jack. So much more that we do for these kids, they do for us.
Quickly, what advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Give your parents a big hug. Give your children a big hug. And value life. And look up our website, because you could be introduced to some amazing teachers at Kids Kicking Cancer. If these kids could get through their pain, if these kids get through their stuff, we can view everything in life as an opportunity. And that opportunity, Jack, with these teachers, we could really light up the planet.
Rabbi, thanks a million for coming on. I think that your daughter, Sarah, and hundreds of kids in eternity sing your praises 26 hours a day up there. What you're doing is phenomenal. Please keep it up.
Thank you so much, Jack.
Our guest next Sunday will be the University of Michigan's athletic director, Bill Martin. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.